We light our candles for Advent. The first candle reminds us to wait. And the second candle reminds us to prepare. Listen for the word of the Lord. And there were angels living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. I'm sorry, there were shepherds living out in the field. And the angel of the Lord appeared to them. And the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in clothes and lying in a manger." And suddenly, a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to those on whom his favor rests." When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that's happened, which the Lord has told us about." And so they hurried off and they found Mary and Joseph and the baby, who was lying in the manger. When they had seen them, they spread the word concerning what had been told them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherd said to them. And all who heard it were amazed. Do you remember the last time that you were amazed? I don't mean maybe the last time you saw a movie that was really good or well done, or the last time you ate food and you thought it was so amazing that you took pictures and you put it on the internet so all your friends would know how amazing it was. My wife's giving me a weird look because that's something we do. I mean, do you remember that the last time that you were just going about your day and you were stopped dead in your tracks by something that you couldn't expect and that you could not make sense of? And it required you to stop because you could not move forward until you understood what had happened there. Do you remember the last time you were amazed? We kind of live in an amaze-proof culture. I think part of that is the speed with which we experience technology now. If you think about TV, in the last 115 years, really, has TV been a thing. In the 1900 World's Fair, actually, it was a concept that people were talking about that they thought would soon come. So it was kind of science fiction. But it wasn't until about 39 years after that when the first consumer TVs hit the market. And then after that, it was about another 11 years before the first remote control, which was connected by like a 3-foot cord, so you still had to stand like 3 foot in front of your TV. But then finally, I think it was like in 1954, actually, for the first time ever, the Rose Bowl was broadcast in color television. And if you could afford one of the $1,000 TVs, remember this was a time when people made about $3,000 in a whole year, then you could have seen the first live color TV broadcast. Ever since then, though, things have sped up, right? We have cable TV, satellite TV, HD TV, 1080p, 4K, 8K, whatever. It just keeps getting faster and faster, and our TVs become obsolete quicker and quicker. And so it's no longer amazing to go to the store and discover that they've created some new technology, because that's what happens. And I think that this is happening at a rapid pace, but in order to make these things more and more appealing to us, even though they're happening too fast for us to really keep up, marketers have to keep telling us how amazing they really are. So the iPhone you bought last year that was amazing is boring. It doesn't do the 3D touch thing, whatever that is. But the iPhone that you can get this year for Christmas is amazing. And so now we're in a world where things are happening faster than we can keep up with them, and they don't feel amazing when they happen, but we're constantly told that we're supposed to think they're amazing. And so we've kind of created a culture where we don't truly get amazed anymore. And so it's in a world like this, where we call everything amazing, but we don't really believe it is, that we're trying to make sense of what happened when the shepherds told this story and people were actually amazed. We've seen this story recreated in paintings, nativity scenes. We've heard it sung in Christmas cantatas and operas. We've seen it recited by Linus in the Charlie Brown Christmas. I'm sure somewhere, some church is doing a laser light show and fireworks. You could probably go YouTube it after this and find it. But this means that all in all, this story has become all too familiar to us because we keep adding things to it that will make it amazing. And we don't realize the amazement that's already there. An angel visibly manifested and spoke to the shepherds. And then a whole angel choir came by and they sang. And God's glory shone all around them. I don't really know what that means, but the word shine is there. So I think light's involved, right? And remember, this is a time when there was no electricity. So in order to manufacture light, you had to light a fire. So in a whole field where there was no fire, you could see all the sheep and all the shepherds. And then there was the message itself, right? The message was to go to a barn in a backwater town at the edge of the empire and find God's Messiah, God's chosen one. And this is what the shepherds went around telling people. And that was amazing. See, they spoke of this event that happened that was completely unexpected and inexplicable. People could not imagine an angel choir. But what's more is they definitely could not understand why the master of the universe, the God of Israel, would choose to enter this world as a baby in a barn. Why would an infinite and all-powerful God allow himself to be made finite and vulnerable, subject to the care of a young mother and a reluctant stepfather? Why would the creator of life eternal become subject to death? It just doesn't make sense. The last time I was amazed was on November 7th. I remember because it's the most important night of the year for me. LSU plays Alabama in football. It's always the first Saturday in November. This year, LSU was ranked number 2. We thought they were going to the national championship and producing a Heisman, and then everything fell apart real quick. But my friend John and his wife Jana, who are also from Louisiana, every year Barbara and I get together with them, and we watch the game together. And John and Jana, they've moved down to Highland Park now, and they're planning an Anglican church there. And so one of the main goals that they have with their ministry is to try to bridge some of the gaps in their community between long-standing, well-established families that have lived there and the new gentrification that's coming in and the tensions that are resulting as that new gentrification happens. And so what John wanted to do is he wanted for he and I to get together and cook up some jambalaya, like we always do, and to invite all of his neighbors over to watch football and to eat good food. And so we did this, and we projected the football game onto his back wall from his courtyard. And as we were sitting there watching the football game, all of a sudden, somewhere in the second quarter when the game was still 0-0, someone said, "Hey, what's that?" and pointed up into the western sky. And we all looked up, and there was this bright light, this spectacular light. I've never seen anything like it. And it was slowly moving from south to north across the horizon. And for 3 minutes, we all watched it. By the time I looked back at the football game, LSU was losing. And it stayed that way.
But the light was so bright, it looked like the spotlight on a helicopter. And we knew that LA has a lot of helicopters, but if it was going to be close enough for us to see the light, we would have been hearing the helicopter. So it was completely silent, and we didn't know what it was. So I got on my phone, and I started Googling UFO, Highland Park. There's a lot of crazy videos, by the way. You're probably not surprised. But it took me 40 minutes, and then finally something hit the news sources. So the LA Times, I think, was first, and then some other people. The U.S. Navy had test-launched a missile, a Minuteman ballistic missile, from a submarine somewhere off of San Diego. It made sense. It was still spectacular, but it wasn't really amazing anymore because I knew what it was. And in fact, once I knew what it was, I had remembered that I've already seen a Minuteman test before. So this wasn't even the first time that I'd witnessed this. See, neuroscientists tell us that our brains are hardwired to try and make sense out of things we experience. And so our brains can't deal with anomalies or mysteries. They perplex us. And even worse, they can't deal with contradictory information. So when we have two pieces of information that seem contradictory, our brains try to flatten out the narrative so everything's cohesive. We like linear narratives. And Christians, in particularly, over time, have managed to make certain paradoxical claims. Claims like, Jesus Christ is fully God and fully human. Or the master of the universe, the immortal God, became mortal human. We take these mysteries and we try to explain them. We remove the amazement out of them. And if we can't explain them, we even sentimentalize them, turn them into a children's story, or maybe a once-a-year nod to our heritage. But the God of the universe refuses to be reduced to explanation, and he will not be boxed in by sentimentality. See, the flashiness of our Christmas traditions, the lighting of the trees, the dancing, singing yard ornaments, the big box office movies, they all conspire to hide the sense of true amazement that comes with the Christmas event. Originally, the Christmas season was meant to be Advent, a time of preparation, a time when we prepared to receive news that was so amazing we didn't know what to do with it. It was meant to be the wind and the earthquake and the fire that preceded God's presence with Elijah, to be the angel choir and the shining glory that preceded God's presence in the manger. The Christmas gift of amazement is the gift that when we're confronted with God's plans for our salvation, we don't have to make sense of it. In fact, usually if we're trying to make sense of it, we're trying to earn it or to have it on our own terms. And that's just not how it works. The continuing gift of Christmas is that Jesus confronts us, even today, in amazing ways. And by amazing, I don't mean flashy displays of authority and power, but ordinary things like hospitality and conversation and food and prayer. In fact, when I think about the ways that Jesus has been present in my life, it's not the creche on the lawn, but the prayer bench where I find Jesus. Often he's in the still small voice that I've heard when I was praying about life decisions or challenges to my own faith. I also think back to that night in Highland Park, though. Yes, the football game was good, but it wasn't Jesus. And trust me, the Alabama fans really need to know that. And yes, the missile was spectacular and captivating, but it wasn't Jesus. Instead, Jesus is in the birth of the small gathering of Christians right there in Highland Park who are seeking to love their neighbors
and to be his body in that neighborhood. So as we progress through our Advent season, as we sing our beloved hymns and light wreaths, we too should remember that Jesus is not in the music of our singing, and he's not in the lighting of our Advent candles. These are mere sentimentalities if they do not open our ears to hear the still small voice of a newborn baby and the community of people who gather at his side. And that is nothing short of amazing.